Welcome to Red Carpet Healthcare Solutions, hosted by Dr. Ryan Mauley and Travis Buzzell. Join us on this journey as we educate the patient population, inform today's medical providers, and inspire tomorrow's medical leaders through education and in-depth discussion. We can all discover today's best healthcare solutions. Now, sit back and enjoy Red Carpet Healthcare Solutions, Private Practice Podcasters.
Hello, everybody. I'm Dr. Ryan Mauley, and welcome to Red Carpet Healthcare Solutions, Private Practice Podcasters. I'm joined by my co-host,
Travis Buzzell.
And before we get started here, I urge you guys to like, comment, subscribe, give us suggestions, any guests that you may want to see in future episodes. But today, this is an episode that I've been waiting for a while. We've had a chance to kind of speak with our guest backstage for, you know, a good 10, 15 minutes or so. And I'm like, man, this guy is cut from the same cloth as me.
Oh, 100%. I mean, as I'm listening to the conversation, I'm like, this is a spine surgeon that's just like you in another part of the country.
Yeah. What's it going to take to get him over here? So without further ado, I'd like to introduce and welcome Dr. Stefano Sinacropi, orthopedic spine surgeon that has just had tremendous success in the private practice world. I can't wait to hear his story, how he created this practice, and it's evolved over the years. And he has some other passions in life too that I'd like to touch on. So welcome, Dr. Sinacropi.
Welcome.
Yeah, appreciate you guys having me. I've been looking forward to the show, follow, you know, your guys' content. You know, Doc, I was saying before, as we were in the backstage, how much I love your passion that comes through and the way you wear your emotions on your sleeve. Because I do that. I just, you know, I go on these rants as well and just love to talk about what's going on, the state of the state. Because, you know, when we see things, I think it's our responsibility to step up and really talk about it. Because people do want to know what's inside the doc's heads and want to know kind of what we think, not what they read in some magazine or something like that or hearsay, but they just really want to hear what we're thinking and where things are going. So really appreciate you guys having me on the program today. Really honored.
Absolutely. You know, as we always start these episodes out, we like to give our guests, but also ourselves, a little insight as to who our guests are. So if you don't mind, could you give us a little 2 to 3 minute, 30,000 foot view of who Dr. Sinacropi is, where you grew up, kind of your training, your background, and what led you to Minnesota? Because you're an East Coast guy.
It's a great question.
Had to be woman or
a passion for the Vikings.
Something.
You know, it's interesting. I'm a big digressor. Without even joking, I'm a huge New York Jets fan because I grew up in the Bronx. So we'll start there, but it's interesting. The only NFL jacket that I've ever owned was a Minnesota Vikings jacket, which I got like when I was like 13 years old.
Was it a starter jacket?
It was one of the, yeah, it was, I think it was maybe it was either a starter or a champion jacket or something like 100%. That. I think I had it until like 20 years ago and now it's gone, but it was the only one I had. So maybe it was like I had a premonition, something in the universe was telling me I would eventually end up in Minnesota.
Chris Carter was recruiting you to Minnesota.
There you go. But anyway, yeah. So I'm just a kid. I grew up in the Bronx. Had a really interesting, you know, upbringing. We can talk about that offline one day, but, got to see, it was just a very different upbringing in the 70s and 80s, in the Bronx, New York. Was able to be around all types of ethnic groups. And it was just a phenomenal, it was just a great, kind of launch pad into just being around all different types of people. I was always interested in doing something in the people realm. So when I was a kid, I either wanted to be an attorney, a physician, just something around people. I also wanted to be an astronaut, actually, I should say. But that's and I still have that on my list of things to do for the Mars mission. But going through college, eventually was really, really interested in potentially becoming a doctor. The more I learned about it and going through some orthopedic injuries myself, was around some amazing orthopedic surgeons, and was just had it in the back of my mind, and eventually made the decision that I wanted to go down the route of doing this. And I always thought orthopedic surgery would be great. Went to Columbia University for medical school after Fordham U. Really fell in love with the spine anatomy and had some great mentors there. Fell in love with the opportunity to be able to help people with their spine conditions. Eventually decided I was going to do that. Did an orthopedic, after I did my orthopedic surgery residency, I went off to the Leatherman Spine Fellowship in Louisville, Kentucky, University of Louisville, which was just incredible. Opportunity to train under some really wonderful people. And then from there, it's history. Then I was called, you asked me the question, how did I end up in Minnesota? So I was called by a recruiter. And I can tell you my first reaction was like, what is this guy? What? Minnesota? And it was my wife who said, we were in New York, and she said, why are you so closed-minded? Why don't you think of other stuff? I'm like, Minnesota, what's in Minnesota? Like, you know, a bunch of forests and things like that. I knew nothing about it, other than the Vikings, of course. And I took the call, was very interested after hearing what they were trying to do and the fact that they were looking for somebody. And it just seemed like a good opportunity because, a lot of us that are New Yorkers, we tend to be in that New York mentality silo. And the one thing about being a surgeon in New York, which is a little bit different than coming to the Midwest, and, you guys are Midwest and, in Erie, is that in New York, man, you're kind of in training for about another 10 years once you come out, because it's such a saturated market. So I thought to myself, do I want to live in a 200 square foot apartment for the first 10 years of my practice because I can't afford anything? I said, no, let me take a look at the Midwest. So there was this amazing opportunity. I took it and it's been history since. It was an amazing decision. The people of Minnesota are wonderful. I love taking care of people in this part of the world. It's completely different. It's hard to explain Minnesota nice. I think I need to be here for another 10 years before I can really accurately explain what that means. There's two sides to that, but it's been wonderful being in this community, and I've had the privilege of
you're coming up on 20 years though.
I've been here 20 years, but Minnesota, Minnesota nice is easier to explain if you're from Minnesota. When you're an outsider, it's complicated.
So you mentioned something about your passion for spine. So most people, did you want to do spine first and decide, hey, I want to be a spine surgeon. How do I get there? Which, as you and I were kind of talking earlier, there's really two routes, whether it's neurosurgery or orthopedic surgery.
Right.
Or did you fall in love with orthopedics and then get exposed to spine and go that way? Because I can tell you one brief story when I was in my orthopedic kind of trying to find your residency. You're going around, you're gunning for these orthopedic spots, and you don't know exactly what you want to do subspecialty wise, or if you just want to do general orthopedics. But the first subspecialty that I crossed off my list was spine. And that was because I was up in East Lansing at Michigan State. And one of the cases that I scrubbed was a 16-hour spine surgery. As a med student that's trying to get this residency position, you're like a robot. You're like, no, I'm not tired. Nope, I don't need to go to the bathroom. Nope, I don't need to grab a bite to eat. Nope, I don't need a drink. No, I don't need to sit down at all. So I stood at that table for 16 straight hours, never went to the bathroom, never ate, never drank. I remember we finished the case around 11 o'clock at night, and the attending bought us all, like probably about the entire team, like 20-some pizzas. I ate an entire large pepperoni pizza myself and drank a 2-liter bottle of Mountain Dew. Good, healthy nutrition after 16 hours.
That's right. Like,
okay, things I'm not going to do.
Spine surgery. Cross it off.
So sorry for that long-winded story, but did you want to do spine first, or did you get into ortho and then get exposed to spine?
I mean, that's great. So when I actually always had a little bit of an interest in spine. I didn't really know, but when I was a med student, actually, I really considered going down the neurosurgical route. And so just like you, you know, I've got stories. So I scrubbed into all these neurosurgery cases. When I did my, as I was thinking about what I wanted to do, and I sat through an acoustic neuroma, and that's when I made the decision that there's no chance that I'm going to do neurosurgery because it's not my personality. I like to, you know, I like to move through things and just be more active. So I said, okay, neurosurgery, I can't sit here picking at a tumor for hours. I don't know how many hours it was, but it was the longest. It was just infinity, how it felt sitting through that.
It was that nice experience.
Yeah. So yeah, exactly. And so then I was like, okay, I like ortho. Ortho, it just seems good. It fit my personality. You know, I'm just kind of a classic kind of ortho kind of guy. And so went down that field. When I went into ortho at Columbia University, I mean, you talk about for upper extremity stuff, giants of the game. So Louis Biliani was there, who was the shoulder
that I mentioned.
Amazing, amazing guy. And so, and Dr. Bill Levine was there, who is now the William Levine, but I call him Bill. But he was at the time just kind of up and coming. Now he's the chairman of the orthopedic surgery program at Columbia. So I really fell in love with upper extremity surgery. So my mentor, my direct mentor, was Melvin Rosenwasser, who was a hand and trauma specialist. And so I had done a little mini fellowship with him before I even started my residency as part of the residency program. I did a year of research with Dr. Rosenwasser. And so I love the upper extremity stuff, everything, anything from the shoulder to the hand. But as soon as I scrubbed in, I could tell you it was only a couple of cases where I scrubbed into spine with Dr. Weidenbaum and Dr. Mickelson, who were kind of the primary spine guys that we work with when we were there. And I fell in love with it instantly. And then I started just consuming everything spine. There was Dr. David Roy, a big pediatric spine surgeon, who would pretty much operate on all the rich and famous, kids from Connecticut and all this stuff. So we had I had this amazing, amazing experience in spine. Now, the interesting thing of what you say, you hated spine. I think guys like yourself that were so anti-spine, once you kind of tried it out, because I will tell you, in my residency, there were three of us out of six that wanted to do spine and became spine surgeons, and three that wanted to go into sport, like the sports realm. And so we all traded. And so for the majority of our residency after PGY3s, I pretty much only did spine. So the spine guys pretty much rotated in spine. And everyone else did, because the last thing I wanted to do was tie knots in the shoulder, doing shoulder arthroscopy or doing ACLs. That stuff, my level of interest was zero doing that. I did like the trauma. So yeah. We had this incredible, I mean, honestly, I spent my last 2 years, I spent like 8 out of the 12 months doing spine surgery. So by the time I was in fellowship doing spine, all of us that were going down the spine route had done pretty much mini fellowships at Columbia before we even started our fellowship. So it was incredible going into a fellowship already being trained in spine. So that I was able to have such an experience where they're like, oh, this guy already knows how to do spine surgery. So they kind of let us go. So it was just the stars lined up in such an incredible. I'm just so blessed, and it was nothing I did. It just kind of happened. It was incredible.
Yeah. You know, I won't say I hated spine, because when I got into orthopedic surgery, we obviously had to do some spine rotations. And the one surgery that I absolutely loved, and I wish I could do it, was the ACDFs. I don't know what it was about that, because I can't do those multi-hour surgeries. I can do a lot of surgeries. I'm a high-volume arthroplasty surgeon, but I'm a 40, 45-minute, hour max kind of guy. Unless I'm doing a revision, and then those seem like I'm doing that spine case again, but they're maybe 2-3 hours, but they seem like they're much longer. But ACDFs, to me, they seemed really cool, and it felt like it was that immediate gratification that I kind of get from, and I liked trauma too, because it was that, okay, the bone's broken, now it's obviously it needs to heal, but I've made the x-rays look really pretty. Same thing with arthroplasty. It's like, it's a really ugly arthritic knee. I've made it look, and it's going to move and it's going to function well. And these people are going to do well in 6 to 8 weeks. They're going to love me. So
I think it's interesting that, you know, both of you guys and, you know, multiple, you know, physicians that I've known, you know, over the years, it's like hearing your story and how you get to where you are now, it is very much like the stars align, right?
Yeah,
like
correct.
Every single, you know, one of these, hey, you know, give me your, you know, give me your background. You know, how is your, give me the folklore. How'd
almost
you
always an athlete.
Yeah.
Probably had some type of injury.
Like a lot of the same sort of, and a lot of the same personalities too, right? I mean, that's one thing that I've noticed.
I wish I had biceps like he did.
Well,
it's just, no, listen, I buy my shirts one size smaller. So don't, it's not
me. A lot like Travis.
I did see the barrel of water that you were drinking. So, but no, I think it is interesting. And, you know, Doc, I would agree with you that, you know, the stars align and, you know, it's not always kind of a straight line, but it is interesting to me, you know, and having these conversations with, you know, multiple people and, you know, kind of just seeing the progression and, you know, how you get there. It's just like, it's always sort of like there's three or four things that just sort of fall and it takes you down that path. And it just seems to kind of be a constant in most of these conversations, which I think is very cool. So,
yeah, I don't think things just happen just by coincidence. I think there is some, not to get too spiritual or anything, but I think there's some divine intervention in a lot of these success stories where people, and it's always people, right? It's like you had your mentors that led you down the path. And same thing with me. There's like two or three mentors that really like shine that light for me. And I was like, this is what I want to do.
You know, and that just, that sparked something for me. like the passion, you know, sort of what you were talking about. And, you know, earlier when we were just kind of talking and, you know, getting to know one another, you know, one of the things that came up for me that I wanted to just kind of highlight is like, you know, just listening to you guys, and obviously I've known you for as long as I have, and, you know, other physicians, like you guys are just really passionate. You really care, right? And put so much into, you hear these stories, you know, yet the stars align, but so much effort. I mean, so much training, so much schooling, right? And it's like, you know, you get to the top of the mountain and you finally, it's like, okay, I'm a physician now. Now I'm going to start helping people. And, you know,
there's another mountain above it.
All right. Well, you know, there's something that you said. It's like sort of the allure to, you know, even just, you know, being a physician. It's like, it's commoditized, right? It's like one of those things where, you know, everyone's like, oh, I got this little plastic card that's got numbers and letters on it. And so you have to make sure that, you know, you provide me with this care. And it's like, you're not entitled to that, right? It's like, you know, there needs to be, you know, a respect factor of like, hey, you know, I'm the physician and these are the recommendations that I'm making because I've been doing this a lot longer than you. And I trained at some of the best places in the world, in the country to get to, you know, what these recommendations are. And it's like, now, Doc, I think I just need this. Now, can we just do this? I don't want to do that. What about this? And it's sort of like, why are you here? Like, what's going on here?
You sound like my wife now. She chats around until she gets the answer wants.
Exactly.
And what medical school did you go to, Karen?
Love my wife. It's a shame, though. It's become sort of like, you know, it's just another job. And for me, it's like, for you guys, it's like, it's not a job. It's a calling. And, you know, you really take, you know, a lot of care and pride and lose sleep over some of this stuff when things don't go your way, you know, and you don't get the outcome that you want. And it's like, but the general population, they don't see that, you know, they just get me in office hours, have to do the surgery and, you know, I'll see you down the road. And, you know, I just wish that, you know, the masses could see, you know, from my lens with it, you know, and obviously I have a different level of exposure, you know, with you guys that it's like, you know, there's a lot that goes into this.
Yeah, you're behind the scenes.
Yeah, and I appreciate it because I know how hard it is to get to, you know, to that point. And I know how hard it is to, once you get there, to maintain it and continue to innovate and, you know, work around the insurances and the health systems. And it's like, in addition to trying to, you know, sit across from, you know, another human and say, hey, I'm here to help and I'm going to fix your problem and have, you know, eight other things going on around you that are trying to impede you from doing what you need to do while you're trying to focus on, you know, the goal in front of you. And it's just like, you know, I take my hat off, and it's just like, you know, we're lucky to be, you know, in this country and have, you know, physicians like you guys that are here and have sacrificed so much to, you know, ensure that, you know, when we need you, you know, you're here. And sometimes it's a thankless job, but yeah, you had said that, and it just resonated with me because I've seen it, and I'm like, you're not wrong.
Part of this, and the whole reason that I started this kind of journey on podcasting, and then you and I started Red Carpet Healthcare Solutions, was, and Doc, we were talking about the issues with, and I'd like to segue kind of into this, is
sure.
I don't want to bitch and moan about the problems in medicine, because we've all heard it, we've all said it, but there is a healthcare crisis. There's absolutely no doubt about that. Docs are leaving medicine at alarming rates. You know, I talk about this almost every episode. Yesterday, I read Dr. Rosen's and listened to his YouTube testimonial, 28 minutes of his journey with mental health and near suicide. And it just really, really struck a chord with me. And it has for the past year, where we hear now that physicians own the number one spot for suicides by profession in this country. And orthopedic surgeons are almost a third of it. It's 28.2%, which is just alarmingly scary for me. Burnout, you know, just job dissatisfaction. A new term that my life coach has kind of given me is compassion fatigue, right? Like, we take care of people for so long, and we don't take care of ourselves, or we kind of sublimate because we're these robots, militant type of, like, our training just kind of builds that into us. So what are some of the, I'd like to ask you about your practice a little bit, because we there's some great footage that we were talking offline about, and how you kind of built it to where it is, but how you have made your practice so successful. And one of the key things that you mentioned to me, that's again a solution, was lifestyle was so important in how you develop such a successful private practice.
Yeah. So first of all, you guys just opened up a can of, do you have about 10 hours? You brought up lots of stuff, but I just want to talk about it for a second. And so, it is so difficult to go down the path that we go down, and it is not like you said exactly. It's not because we want sympathy or anything like that, because we are passionate. We love what we do, and we're privileged that there's nothing else I'd rather have done, you know, to this moment, because it's the opportunity. Just think about what we do, and I don't know if you think about it in these terms. Sometimes I sit there myself in awe. Like, I'll just be sitting in the dark and about to be called into a surgery. And if you think about it, somebody is letting you take a knife, open up their body, and work inside of their body as surgeons. I don't think we think about that enough. Like, the privilege, I mean, it's so deeply, deeply personal. And that's why our training has to be so rigorous and intense. Because if you're going to do that, and you're going to be working inside somebody's body, manipulating things, in my case, working around the spinal cord and nerves, in your case, joints and this and that, you better have been tested and put through the, you know, have your feet put through the fire, because otherwise, you know, it's dangerous. I mean, it is such a remarkable privilege. So it's not, I just want the audience to know it. This isn't because, you know, we want to complain about stuff and say, poor me as physicians and this and that.
Absolutely.
However, people have to understand, and I'm very passionate about physician burnout. I talk about it a lot, as you do. And I really respect you for doing that. I respect you for even sharing, you share about, you know, about your own story, but also, you know, are very compassionate about other physicians that are going through things. The physician burnout problem it's scary. And the reason that the American public, I'm almost done with my book that comes out next year. And it talks a lot about what we need to do to fix healthcare and this and that. But the reason that the American public needs to be alarmed at what's happening to us, And so they don't need to sit around and say, hey, oh my, oh, poor guy, you know, he's, you know, because obviously, you know, the orthopedic surgeons do very well as far as the general population. So we don't need sympathy in that way. However, the fact that they're, as you mentioned, the suicide problem, the depression problem, the anxiety problem, the feeling like we're commodities problem, the feeling like we're just another worker, even though we've given up basically our entire youth to get to where we are now, that is not just a us problem. It's not a Dr. you know, Molly and Dr. Sinacropi problem and our colleagues. It is a problem that affects the delivery of healthcare in the United States. So if you have a group of burnt out physicians who themselves are undergoing both mental and physical health problems at a rate that is, it is alarming to me, and I'm trying to be at the forefront of helping my colleagues to combat some of these things, it does not bode well for how healthcare is delivered to other people. Because when physicians are dissatisfied, the care that they're able to provide to the patient population, the empathy, you talk about empathy burnout, all these other things, it becomes harder and harder to provide the solutions that we really need, because we need a whole body solution. And we'll get into that, because I'm a huge wellness advocate in addition to doing surgery. It has to be all combined, you know, combining Western, Eastern medicine, all this other stuff. But we need to get to, we really need to solve some of these problems in not just physician burnout, but in general provider burnout. So physicians, there's nurse practitioners, all these things. There is a general unease amongst healthcare providers because things have become so corporatized. They've become so commoditized. It's just, it's become so transactional. Right. I remember growing up when I was in the 80s, when I first started becoming kind of obsessed with just my own personal doctors as a kid, having all these orthopedic injuries, I was just blown away. These guys were rock stars, man. You know, they kind of walked out, and man, you went to the doctor. My parents were like in awe of the doctor. Oh my God, we're going to see the orthopedic. Now we're just, another guy or gal that we're going to see. Just the point, just the same. You know, you go see your doc, you see the hairdresser, you see your trainer, and everyone's the same. So it's a very different thing. And this is hard. It is very difficult for us to provide, just to be very happy when we are put in situations where we've lost our autonomy. We've lost that kind of, that kind of aura that physicians had forever and ever. You read books like one of my favorite books is about the pandemic of 1718. Man, the physicians, I mean, it was incredible the way they all came together. There was such a respect for the field, and that continued right in the 1900s. And then there was a deterioration. That being said, looking for solutions for this, the health crisis that's going on in the physician world is going to be very, very key. And the number one thing is to get our mental and physical health in order. And I'm very passionate. I'm passionate about it for the public, but I'm very passionate about it for our colleagues. So when you ask the question about the way that our practice has been successful and set up, you know, in one way, we're very successful because we provide, I feel like I have been able to put together some of the best surgeons in the country under one roof to provide incredibly, efficient, safe, and world-class services. But I think that what makes it all go, and I think a lot of the public, when they listen to these things, they don't think of it this way. What makes it all go is that our practice is really focused on lifestyle management of the physicians, autonomy of the physicians, having basically a group that is going to always come to the rescue when physicians have either, if they have a health issue, if they have an issue with hospital administration, if they're undergoing a tough patient issue, they always have partners that they can rely on to go to. That does wonders for their mental health. And we've chosen to, you know, provide services in a way where we basically have a group of very talented physicians, and we lease out our services to hospital systems and just say, listen, here is our bullpen. right? We've got left-handers, we've got right-handers. This guy throws curveballs. That guy's really a slider guy. And you can pick and choose. If you like these four better, then we'll use them to service your hospital to take call. If you like this guy better because he does this, if you think this guy can build a better outpatient, you know, surgical center for you, hey, and we lease our services and we basically dictate our terms. And it works out fantastic for both parties. And I really would like to promote this type of mentality for more physicians, because I can tell you, and I shared this a little bit with you guys before, and again, I'm not trying to get sympathy for physicians, because on it, you know this, it's very hard for us to get any sympathy from the general public. It's just not going to happen.
That's not our goal either, as you mentioned.
Not at all, but they're struggling too, right? The general population is struggling with health and wellness issues beyond, and that's like really my overarching thing. That's what I'm really gotten into, but I'm not trying to do that, but I wish... And this is will be my second book, and I've already talked about it, but we'll wait till the first book comes out. But my second book is really, I want to talk about conversations with physicians where they've been in practice for a long time, but they're so disgruntled on the way they feel that they've been slighted by the system. I know you hear these conversations all the time, and people have sacrificed their mental and physical health to do this, and they feel so burdened by administrative tasks. They feel burdened directly by administration because they feel like, sometimes we feel like we're the lowest rung on the totem pole, depending on the type of practice structure you're in. And that's very, very difficult. And it's leading to a lot of these very difficult conversations. And people know that, you know, now I'm like the wellness guy. So now doctors talk to me about stuff offline. They're like, hey, can I talk to you a little bit? I want your advice on how do I deal with this thing in my practice, or I'm in trouble with this thing. Like, what do I do? And I can tell you that, and again, I am, and I know that, and thank you, by the way, for you guys, you know, following some of my social stuff and things I talk about, but I'm a completely glass half empty optimist. I'm the optimist of the optimists. And so I don't say this lightly, but there's a tone when we talk about what is the general feeling amongst physicians. I don't like where we are right now, and there needs to be changes. And I know you feel that because I've watched the things you talk about. You know, maybe you didn't put it exactly like this, but it is, it's not that super energetic, not like you. You are like Mr. Energetic. I mean, you exude energy and passion, but when we take it as an aggregate, this is not where people are, not where we are. They're just not. Our colleagues, an aggregate. Yeah, there's colleagues that are happy-go-lucky and they couldn't be more excited to come in every day. But that is not where the profession is. And I'd love to be part, as you are, of getting our profession back to that level. And some of it is going to be getting their autonomy back, getting them back into positions where they feel like they are CEOs of their own life, as opposed to other people managing everything for them, including hospital systems, insurance companies, pharmaceutical companies, all these other people that have such an influence behind the scenes. And then the doctor ends up being the last person that, you know, we're just kind of eviscerated, so to speak. I don't feel like that because I'm in a completely different situation, because we made it the way we want it to be. But many, many people are like this. And boy, we really need to make some serious changes going forward, because we are at a precipice right now. America is in the middle of a horrible chronic disease crisis. And we really, really need healthcare delivery to change. And the physicians need to be at the forefront of this healthcare delivery. We need to be the ones that are coming up with the solutions. But if we feel, you know, mentally burnt out, physically burnt out, we it's hard for us to be part of the solution.
Yeah. I mean, amen. I think you'll really enjoy our last guest, who his episode will come out probably end of this month or early October. We were partners for a year. He was 3 or 4 years below me in residency. Dr. Blake Miller, he's an orthopedic traumatologist that's actually kind of, I don't want to say phasing out of traditional medicine, but he kind of is. He actually got a functional medicine degree. And awesome. My goodness, his understanding of biochemistry and just the physiologic, biology. Yeah, it just was unbelievable. He and I were big, and I'm sure you know this name, Peter Attia.
Yes.
And back in 2010, Blake kind of introduced me to Peter and his content. And Peter's evolved over the years, right? I mean, he was big, just keto, keto, keto. And then he's evolved. And I don't know if you listen to his podcast, The Drive, but he's got that. He's got a great book out. He's a very, very intelligent guy, but Blake is similarly intelligent. And, you know, I posted something on LinkedIn the other day about, like, if you weren't a physician, what would you do? And his was PhD in biochemistry and gut health and stuff like that. And he's all about, like, the wellness package too. And I'm a huge wellness advocate. I started a wellness institute at our orthopedic practice, where I hired a team, a nurse practitioner and several other individuals that help assist our patients before surgery, and even patients that aren't going to have surgery, to optimize their health. It was made to kind of optimize these people before surgery so that we can help with their chronic diseases. And I don't like the word chronic diseases, as Blake kind of pointed out, that makes it sound like, oh, this happened to me and there's no way out, right? Like, you're going to have it forever. Exactly. Like, preventable diseases like diabetes, hypertension in most cases, hyperlipidemia in most cases, just all these things, obesity, oh my goodness. And instead of saying, hey, you're obese, you're uncontrolled diabetic, you're a smoker, you're anemic, you're malnourished, go fix this and come back when you're ready, we'll do surgery. Like, we're getting lab values before I even meet them so that I can look at it and say, wow, their albumin's, you know, 2.7 and their A1C's 8.7 and this. So we need to optimize these parameters before we can really even discuss surgery. I mean, we can have superficial conversations about it. So I love your stuff. You've got this wellness, wellness at the speed of light?
Wellness at the speed
of light. Can you tell us a little bit about that? Because that's like a second passion that you have, right?
Yeah, absolutely. I love, you know, now we're talking. I love the fact that you started that Wellness Institute and everything like that. So just to give you a very brief version of it, because it's kind of a long-winded story. One of the, you know, things that I think that we need to do, and it's awesome what you're doing, and I love it what your former partner's doing. I look forward to that episode. Because we are hardcore, you know, Western medicine trained, I mean, your training's a little bit different than mine. I mean, you know, in my world, forget it. I mean, we got about 8 hours of nutrition total. And I went to an amazing thing. No offense, Columbia University, incredible medical school, incredible. And you know, just love those guys. However, the comprehensive, you know, wellness training, any training in functional medicine, any of this stuff, it just doesn't exist. It didn't exist when I was there. I mean, it's getting a little bit better. That being said, I came out a very siloed guy. I'm a spine surgeon, right? I do spine, but I was always into health and wellness personally. You know, like Peter Attia, all that stuff, all those guys. I'm sure that we follow all the same people, right? Yeah. Because those of us that are into this stuff, it's. And I just finished reading his book; is excellent. I read it maybe like 2-3 months ago, something like that. Fantastic. And he shares a lot. He's very personable in there. He just tells a lot about his story and things he went through. So anyway,
his wife put it, stop being the not skinny version. Because and this guy was a multi-sport athlete. He was doing marathons and because he was going to go have a burger after like doing some triathlon, and his wife was like, do you really think you should be having that burger, Peter? Because you're, why don't we think about the not skinny version of
I love it. I mean, it's awesome. I mean, but long story short, you know, I was also in the same silo that I talk about a lot. I know you've seen some of my rants where I talk about how as Westernized physicians, we need to get out of these silos. Where I was in that, I do spine surgery, and all the metabolic stuff and the cardiac stuff, the hypertension, the obesity, that their primaries need to deal with that. I'm not dealing with that. I would see people. I knew that they weren't good surgery. I like, you got to go and get fixed. I don't care. I'll take care of you when you're ready. And right. So But a couple of years ago, my son went through an injury, an orthopedic injury himself, the usual stuff. And I met a guy who is now my partner in these wellness centers that we've built here in Minnesota, who educated me on some more functional medicine things, but more importantly, a lot of biohacking. So I never thought of biohacking for patients. I mean, I would do a little bit of stuff myself, not much. It was more nutritional, but I never thought of it. And so as soon as it got through my thick skull that maybe I should educate myself on things that even I was skeptical on, like things that I'm now huge passionate about, photobiomodulation or light therapy, class 4 laser therapy, all these things that now I'm a massive proponent on and have all these projects going on these things. I eventually said, you know what, I'm going to read some of these things. And I started reading about holistic treatments and this and that. Next thing you know, I'm reading every textbook I can find. I have concussion textbooks and I have textbooks on you know, started educating myself on, like you mentioned, the microbiome, was starting to read this stuff and consuming it like I was, you know, again, in med school. That's how excited I was to go back to those texts. And at some point I had an epiphany. This is a couple of years ago. And I just thought to myself, oh my God, I can do so much more good if I expanded my offerings as a human being, because I've always been outgoing. I love talking to people. I love just talking just like yourself. We like to get messages out to the world. And as soon as I learned more about the health and wellness stuff and really learned the hardcore science behind it, I said, oh my God, I can help so many people well outside what I'm doing now as being kind of a traditional spine surgeon. So slowly but surely, I started incorporating this stuff into my own practice and started trying to help people manage their obesity. And I did it through either, you know, keto or paleo, but then became a big intermittent fasting guy through Jason Fung's book, The Obesity Code, which is a book that I literally force many of my patients to. I make them buy it on the spot on Amazon while we're sitting there.
Can you put that book here? I'll have our guy that edits it put that a photo of that book and
awesome.
I'm putting that on my docket. I've heard of it, but I need to read it.
Oh my God. When you read that book and you see that 3/4 of type 2 diabetics can completely reverse their diabetes by intermittent fasting. And Jason Fung, he's a kidney he's a nephrologist by trade, but we're absolutely brilliant. And he breaks it down in a way that a physician like yourself would appreciate, but any lay person can pick up that book and immediately understand. And when I'm telling you, you read that book, you just want to put that burger down. You just, you don't know, you almost don't want to eat anymore.
Maybe I don't want to read it.
It is literally the best book. And so that is my go-to book for my patients that have obesity or type 2 diabetes, that kind of stuff. Anyway, I started learning. And the more, here's what, like, I almost want to get emotional, you know, emotional about it. It's too early in the morning to get emotional. I have games too with my kids too today. So I'll save my emotions for the games.
For the sidelines.
For the sidelines, that's right. But anyway, I started talking to people about their health, not spine surgery, because as you know, when somebody comes in, like if I come in with a bad joint, you know, in about 13 seconds, whether or not I'm a candidate for a replacement surgery, you know that this is what we've spent our whole life doing. What you don't know is you don't know who I am, kind of what my goals and aspirations are, my, you know, just different things. Obviously, you know the health level because you test some of this stuff before, so you kind of know what the general health level is. I started talking to my patients about their health and wellness, and it became apparent to me very early on, you know, a couple of years ago when I started doing it pretty hardcore, people were so appreciative of it. And I noticed that a lot of them were complaining in how they were not getting the education from the Western medical community, even in the primary care circles. Like, they didn't understand. I would just start talking to them about their diabetes, their hypertension. Hey, what meds are you on? hey, why are you doing this? How are you managing your thyroid? Oh, you have adrenal fatigue syndrome. What are they doing for that? People coming in with fibromyalgia. Well, what are the treatments for that? The more I asked questions, the more I became, I'm going to be honest with you, complete alarmed. Okay, five alarm fire. And I thought to myself, what in the world is going on with American healthcare right now? I've got all these patients who are metabolically completely disasters. Here is a spine surgeon having conversations with them about their metabolic health. And it's like the first time they've ever had this conversation in their life. And again, I don't mean, I'm not trying to belittle anyone. I'm not trying to say anything. But this is the state of the American healthcare system, where it has become a lot easier to write a prescription and just to send them out and to start them, even as pre-diabetics, on oral diabetic medications, which makes them more insulin resistant, which then makes them more likely to become brittle diabetics, instead of looking at all of these lifestyle changes that they need to be making that can literally make the difference between having their limbs and not having their limbs, having a heart attack and not having a heart attack,
getting
Alzheimer's disease or not, becoming blind. We could go on and we can go on forever. Having a spending the last 20 to 30 years of their life being wheeled around by a caregiver versus having a vibrant life when they're in their 70s and 80s, spending time at their grandkids' games, having a good time, really enjoying and maximizing their lifespan. And I was, honestly alarmed to a degree where I couldn't believe it. Like it ignited that same passion and fire that I had to become a spine surgeon. And so it became a mission and a passion for me. So after doing that for about, like a year or so, of really being involved, I just went on LinkedIn and said, hey guys, I'm starting a podcast, Wellness at the Speed of Light. And we're going to bring on all of these, renowned people from all over the world. And I'm going to get to the bottom of this because this is an emergency, right? The healthcare crisis is crazy. And I wanted to be involved in that and its history. So from there, I went on to do that. We founded some wellness centers. We're expanding and I'm just, and this is really something that I want to do with my life, talking to people like you and, doing these things and really getting the message out, because we are the contact people for these patients, and we really can make a difference, and they really will listen to us if we really can roll out the message in a palatable, easy to understand way, so that they understand how their choices impact their long-term future.
So I think just listening to both of you kind of talk about that, from my perspective, it's like the system, or like the matrix, as I've begun to call it, it's like, it's just so reactionary. And a lot of this, unfortunately, is predicated off of an insurance perspective, right? Because everyone thinks that this is like these medical problems, I got to go to the doctor, I got to do this. It's like, you could save a ton of money and time if you just start exercising, eating better, drinking more water. I mean, these are just like basic fundamental things that but a big part of it is like insurance companies are not interested in paying for preventative medicine, preventative measures, right? So the biggest thing, like in Dr. Molly's practice,
well, that decreases the revenue, right?
Well,
you don't want to cure people, because if you cure their disease by getting to the root cause of it, aka functional medicine,
right?
You can't continue to, and I'm not trying to be pessimistic, it's just what the reality is, right? No. You can't continue to write those prescriptions, which big pharma, right? That's how the money gets made.
Yeah, and I don't want to be a conspiracy guy, but it's like, come on. I mean, we have had, how many decades? It's like, how many more papers do you need to read? Like, just take a look at it, right? It's happening in front of us every day. And it's like,
we're getting fatter as a country.
100%.
Every year, our children are getting fatter as a country every year. Our nutrition is decreasing because of all of the options out there, the processed foods and whatever it is. Oh, it tastes great. Well, how do you feel afterwards?
Yeah.
Right? When you're crashing and burning.
And I feel like it's just something that has been perpetuating for, so long that it's like, it just seems normal, feeling sluggish and,
achy.
Yeah. Not regular. It's just like, oh, that's just my day. It's like,
right.
No, that's not how that should go. And it's just like, if you do that in any other, you take the emotion and the human side out of it, it's a car, right? You're a car. Well, don't change the oil long enough. And I'm just telling you, I don't care how expensive the car is, it's going to crap out on you, right? And so, and your body will do the same thing, but it just, it's like, I see it every day. And, you know, particularly, you know, in Dr. Molly's practice, you know, we supply these ambulatory SCDs to patients to help prevent blood clots and things like that after these big surgeries. And it's like, why doesn't my insurance pay for that? It's like, I'll tell you why. Because you haven't had a blood clot yet. Huh? They're not interested in paying for it because it's a preventative measure, right? So when you look at like all the things, it's like, well, what's the diagnosis? Well, the diagnosis is to prevent a blood clot. Well, yeah, but that's not a thing, right? They haven't had a blood clot yet. So why are we going to pay for a device?
Just give them some Eliquis, right?
It's crazy. It's more expensive. It's more invasive. It's like, it's an easy measure, but it's something that hasn't happened yet. So we're not interested in doing that. And I think the other thing that you guys are doing with like the Wellness Institute, right? Because, you know, your primary care guys, you know, they're, you know, managing, you know, flus, colds, you know, some of the chronic stuff we're talking about in terms of like, just like from a medication standpoint, if you get to that point. But the Wellness Institute and why I like the physician, you know, now sort of entering into that conversation with, you know, trainers and strength and conditioning guys and, you know, having the dietitians and kind of bringing a team together. I think the biggest problem with, you know, our population and people that are having these issues is accountability, 100% accountability, because, you know, you see your physician when you need them and at your annual, if you even go to an annual, right? So it's just like that's been decreasing over the years. You know, now these health systems are calling and reminding you, hey, you know, you need to come in for your annual or else we're going to dismiss you as a patient. It has nothing to do with them interested in seeing you because they want to make sure you're okay. They just want to make sure that, you know, they keep the patient volume high. But it's like, it's accountability. And to have a support system and a group of people there that, you know, are, you know, pushing you, motivating you, and, you know, someone that's like, okay, I'm doing something, right? I'm drinking something I know I shouldn't be, or I'm picking something and I'm putting it in my mouth that I shouldn't. I'm eating this I know I shouldn't, but I'm going to have to check in a week, right? So I know.
But there's also a pill that can help with that. See? Right? And then I got to give you another pill to help with the side effects from the first pill. So it's, and I think sometimes it's easier for patients, and I'm guilty of this sometimes too, right? Where you get Allison, my life coach, she talks about this mnemonic halt. You know, when we are in a funk, there's four things: hungry, angry, lonely, or tired. So the basic needs, right? So if you're hungry, you can be irritable and you're not yourself. And what do you need? Well, you need to eat, right? So sometimes it's easiest to just, let's just go to McDonald's. Well, then how does that really make you feel? Because then that's probably going to make you feel tired. And then you're tired, you're not going to want to come home and talk to your family. Or so all these basic needs, we need to look at them individually. I love your passion for wellness. I definitely want to talk to you offline about some other stuff that you're doing with your wellness institutes. Sure. With the photo biomodulation type of stuff too, because I'm very interested in that. I do feel like that would be another 10-hour conversation. So, but, yeah, I mean, it's just you're doing some absolutely amazing things. And after spending an hour talking to you, I realized that we're even more alike than I originally thought, because I knew you were
definitely
in this and that, but you kind of have this dual role of like your traditional spine surgery practice, and same here. But as you mentioned, in 5 seconds, I can look at an x-ray and be like, okay, this is a partial knee, this is a total knee, this is a total hip. Those patients want to talk about that. And I'm like, that I can talk about all day and it's easy for me, but that's not really, I can fix that. But unless we fix these other things, you're either going to potentially develop an infection, you know, you're not going to heal as well, and you're going to have these other chronic diseases. So you're not going to be able to enjoy your new hip or your new knee that I put in you. So why can't we focus on some of these other fixable problems, non-viable situations, and preventable issues, so that you can actually enjoy your new hip or your new knee, so that you can go out and play with your grandkids or go out golfing with your buddies or go out to dinner with your spouse, as opposed to having to be looking for the handicap accessible restaurants where you can be pushed into your all you can eat buffet in a wheelchair. Right. So I don't know, man, I love what you're doing. It's great stuff. I think what you're doing with your private practice too, with kind of focusing on the physician lifestyle, is a fantastic thing, because you know, if we can't be good ourselves as providers, how can we be expected to be good and empathetic and compassionate for our patients and even our staff? Because it does build resentment when all these things start to build up and you're just like, you lose that thing that we had when we first started, which was that compassion. And don't get me wrong, I love taking care of people and that's my sole goal, and love being able to get people back to being active and healthy and things like that. But when there's these other obstructions, whether it's, you know, the commoditization of physicians, the decreased reimbursement that the insurance companies continually every single year show us, the and I don't need to be sat on a pedestal or a red carpet rolled out for me when I walk into a room, but just like that normalization of a physician is just another person. Like I don't need you to praise me, but we did do like a third of my life was dedicated to learning this craft and this passion. And I'm the sleepless nights, the worries about, you know, potential complications, people don't see that. So physician wellness is high up on my priority list as well for the second half of my career.
Yeah. You know, absolutely. Fantastic. You know, I think if we can drag some of our colleagues into these mental spaces, again, a lot of them are struggling themselves. The last thing they want to do is, you know, become big health and wellness advocates, because that, you know, they have to deal with their own, you know, they have to, you know, take care of their own internal struggles before they get to that point. They're just trying to get through their days and are doing their craft just fine. But the more of us that can flourish, where everybody, all the physicians, start becoming more comprehensive, whole body, root cause kind of people, the better we're going to be able to deliver healthcare. Because I think that the way we're delivering healthcare right now is missing the boat. It's too pharma and procedure driven. Listen, the procedures you do, it's pretty straightforward. If somebody's hip, you know, if somebody has a horrible joint, it just needs to be fixed, right? There's no laser therapy that's going to fix that and make it go back to normal. It's the preventative stuff, though, that we can really do. One little thing, and I know our you know, our time has kind of run out here, but one of the things I shared this in a post. I was sitting next to these two physicians that were just in the doctor's lounge, just having a bite to eat, but they were talking about all their patients that were in the medical ICU. So they were just sitting there running the list. You know, for people that don't know, running the list means just going through all your patients and just saying, oh, okay, this guy's doing good, this guy's not doing good, we're going to change this medicine, that medicine. And they were, this one needs dialysis, and this needs that, and this guy, oh, we're going to extubate this one, we're going to And I said, you know what, that's wonderful. And it's amazing that we have this level of, you know, brilliant physicians that can take care of the sickest of the sick and get many of those patients out of trouble where they don't die and they're able to actually walk out of the hospital. However, I think that we're focusing on the wrong questions. Instead of worrying about how many people need to be having dialysis and how many people need to be extubated and how many people need stents put in, because, you know, they're sitting there and they don't know how to get these people through. We should be asking their questions. How many people could we have avoided getting into this medical ICU strictly because of the lifestyle choices, not only did they make like on their own accord, because I don't like to blame people, but because of all the external influences that have brainwashed these people since they were 2 years old and were, you know, could coherent enough. Knowing the McDonald's symbol over knowing the name of the president of the United States. I mean, we could go on. There's all these things, you know, these anecdotes. But we have been brainwashed since we're little, as little as I can remember. This is the way it is, right? With junk food and all these toxins around us, and take medications for everything. Boy, you talked about the Matrix, Travis, before. They get us in the Matrix, and next thing you know, you're in the medical ICU. You know, you're 52 years old. You're in the medical ICU. You're in the prime of your life, and you're sick. Yep. All preventable. That's the questions that need to be answered. I'm glad we have this technology to treat all these sick people that need it. But how about we take a different tack so we can cut down on our $4.4 trillion system and help, and people can lead, you know, lead healthier, better lives. So that's it. That's kind of my final
Love it.
You know, closing statement.
So I just had this epiphany myself about, you know, wellness, and I like marketing. I like the business development side of things too, but you know, you're talking about the 70s and 80s. Like, these are technically our golden years, right? That we work so hard our entire careers for, so that we can enjoy retirement, enjoy our families, enjoy our grandkids, and maybe even our great grandkids, and go on trips and this and that. But the way that, and the direction that this country is heading with these chronic preventable diseases, it's not going to allow people to enjoy the golden years, even if they don't make it to the golden years, right? It's such a scary thing when I hear, and it's a sad thing. People work their whole lives and then they die a year or two after they retire. And it's like, how can we get these people so that they can truly, truly enjoy these golden years? So what about Golden Years Wellness Institute, right? Just
love it. Let's do it.
Where our focus is, right, is we want to extend life. We want to, but we don't want to have to do it by this new medication, which causes these side effects. It's like,
right.
Pretty simple. Our bodies are amazing organisms that will tell us what we need, and it will tell us when we have something that we don't need, right? How we respond to something, whether it's excessive sugars, excessive alcohol, whatever it may be. So we need to really preach that and teach that. And as physicians, I think we need to start looking deeper into our calling, our passion, and not saying that the traditional Western style medicine is all bad, because it's not, but there are other ways of looking at this, other philosophies of looking at this. I definitely need to learn more from you about the light therapy stuff, but I just want to thank you for your time, especially this early. You're an hour earlier than us in Minnesota on a Saturday morning. Love, love, love what you're doing. Huge fan. Definitely want to stay connected and talk more offline, but Trav.
Yeah, no, thank you so much. And, you know, I think, you know, for the people that are watching, and, you know, hopefully, you know, as, you know, this sort of content is becoming increasingly more popular, physicians and guys like yourselves are putting yourself out there more, which I think is important, because, you know, there is kind of that silo and this misrepresentation of, you know, who or, you know, what a doctor does, or, you know, who they are as people. And it's just like these sort of conversations really get me fired up and make me excited for, you know, the future. It's like,
we have kids too, right? Yeah, this is important. It's like, that we teach them our youth.
It's not over, right? It's like, people are like, oh man, it's going to crap. It's like, you know, there are a lot of people out there who do care, who have the mindset, who are, you know, driven and engaged in this sort of conversation, that are willing to inspire and bring people together, but willing to do the work. And it's like, the more of these conversations that are, you know, on a platform, because there are other people out there that are like-minded, that are thinking the same exact thing in their rural communities, to make these sort of changes and, you know, bring these sort of, you know, resources to people that are just sort of like, and maybe this conversation is the one that pushes someone, you know, over the edge to say, you know, I'm going to go for it. I'm going to do that. I need to focus on that. And for me, that's why I was so, you know, happy and, you know, honored when, you know, Dr. Molly said, hey, I want you to do this podcast with me. And that's why we do it, and sacrifice the time away from, you know, our families on a Saturday morning, or, you know, on a Wednesday night, or whenever we're doing this, because these conversations matter. And it's like, you know, if we're not having them and no one else is, we just keep, you know, take the red pill in the matrix, right? It's like, there's a way out. So, I thank you for your time and, you know, for the conversation. And so
how do people get in touch with you if follow your content, so that we can put that on the screen too?
Yeah, so they can just look up my name on LinkedIn. I also have a Wellness at the Speed of Light website, which gets people over to all the podcast episodes, and they can learn a little bit about that stuff. But what I really like is really people to follow me on LinkedIn, just my name. And I'm really passionate about getting out this message. I can't believe it. I always say that if my 5 year ago self was listening to the things I talk about now, they would be shocked. I'd be like, who is this guy? did I hit my head or something like that? But again, I can't unsee what I've seen, and I would really encourage people to not just follow yourself or me or things like that, but really find these wonderful physicians out here that are so passionate about getting this message out, because we did take the other pill. And we all of a sudden, our eyes are, you know, we woke up and we said, what in the world is going on here? This is crazy stuff that's going on. I mean, it's literally ludicrous out here. And so the thing that I'm most excited about, and I kind of want to get this message out, is this book that is writing. It's also going to be called Wellness at the Speed of Light. And it's really, In the book, I'm laying out my vision, my blueprint, again, just in my way. It's just kind of my opinion. It's not one of these big, you know, journals that are going to have, you know, 10,000 references to previous healthcare people. It's really how I feel that we can overcome these barriers in delivering healthcare appropriately to people and saving our healthcare system so that people can lead better, more enjoyable lives. And like you said, you right, live out their golden years, not 20 years in a nursing home, being immobile and really not functional and just being miserable, just plain old miserable. So that's really a passion of life. Again, I thank you so much for having me on the show. Love what you guys are doing. You guys are putting out wonderful content and just excited to be part of all of it.
Awesome. Well, thanks again. Enjoy the kids' sports today and have a great weekend. And definitely we need to connect more offline. Okay.
100%.
Awesome. Right. Thank you.
Thanks everybody for tuning in. And again, leave your comments, suggestions, like, subscribe, and we'll see you next episode. Have a great day. As a disclaimer, this podcast is for general informational purposes only and does not constitute the practice of medicine, nursing, or other professional healthcare services, including the giving of medical advice. No doctor-patient relationship is formed. The use of this information and the materials linked to this podcast is at the user's own risk. The content on this podcast is not intended to be a substitute for professional medical advice, diagnosis, or treatment. Users should not disregard or delay in obtaining medical advice from any medical condition they have, and they should seek the assistance of their healthcare professional from any such conditions.